Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips and the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th day of June.
Can you believe it? Half over.
No kidding. Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we will be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. That's right, though. We should say Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Hole in the head gang. And and we have the great Dennis Worster.
Yeah, who, that's right. I'm great.
He's great. And we have him here with us today. Okay, so there was this little thing called the WWDC this week.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I see that, I know it stands for Worldwide Developer Conference, but I try to say, what would, and then I'm lost.
Somebody create.
Create. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I don't know what that's about. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, the WWDC, is at least in principle an event about software because it's about developers.
Yeah.
More specifically, it's an event for people who develop software, and traditionally WWDC is where Apple rolls out new versions of the software powering the iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, and Macs. Of course, there are also usually a handful of hardware announcements. In hardware, there's the new 15-inch MacBook Air, the Mac Studio is back, the new M2 Ultra system on a chip, and an Apple Silicon-powered Mac Pro. And, of course, Apple rolled out its first new hardware platform in a decade, the Vision Pro, a virtual reality headset, which Apple promises is different and better than all the other virtual reality headsets on the market. On the software side, there are new features in the iPhone app. You can leave a message in FaceTime. Messages makes it even more obvious when one of those filthy Android users texts you. And hey, stickers.
Yeah.
AirDrop gets name drop, so you can share your contact info. Wait, that's new? We've always been able to do that on my side. What? Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
There's a new journal app. The iPhone's keyboard is getting a new update, and Standby turns your iPhone into a display, like Google's Next Hub or Amazon's Echo Show. And you don't have to say, hey, before you invoke Siri anymore, which saves you an eighth of a second, so good. And, of course, a couple new watch faces. People are already griping that nothing innovative showed up. What do you expect?
Yeah, really.
For decades now, computer technology has been more evolutionary than revolutionary.
True.
It's not that everything that could ever be invented has been invented, but that we're in a phase of exploring the ramifications of what's already been invented. Slightly faster chips, slightly bigger laptops, yet one more virtual reality headset.
Yada, yada, yada.
OS features other systems have had for years. That's okay. It's these years of noodling around that will result in the next big thing, but not until we've got the noodling out of our systems. What will come out of the new Apple Vision Pro headset? Who knows? And why is it pro? Who knows? But I'm excited to find out. I'm sure that something exciting will come out of it, just as I'm sure that there are people already trying to figure out how to sell their firstborn child to afford one. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's WWDC. And your choices are, I must have everything. I'll pick and choose. Kind of underwhelming. Meh. And I love all these choices. And so far, we have 29 votes.
Survey says.
Meh is distinctly in the lead with 25 of those 29 votes. And I understand that. There are a lot of non-Apple people who could not conceivably care less about this stuff.
I still say all these manufacturers have to get off their butt and do something to increase battery life.
Right.
Yep. And I think that's happening. You know, we're, at least in the Mac world, we're seeing Apple's home-built silicon, first-party chips that Apple themselves are making, have tremendous...
The M1, the M2.
The M-series chips, at least in the laptops, and I'm sitting in front of one that I absolutely adore that's 2 years old already. I charge this laptop twice a week.
Yep.
And I use it every single day.
Yep. But I'm talking about the cell phones. Cell phones, yep. Now, because...
cell phones have a different challenge.
Yeah,
they have all the CPU power that they need, right, to run essentially a full-on computer
Yeah, it's a computer
system.
In your pocket.
And it's also a high-resolution display, so it needs all the video hardware it takes to push all those pixels in full color.
Mm-hmm.
It also needs the power to run radios. You have to run a Bluetooth radio and a Wi-Fi
radio.
Or
the movies.
And to play full-on, full-motion video, as well as all of the cell phone antennas that it takes to run a modern cell phone.
And that's why I'm saying, though, and I've been saying it, I think, for at least 2 or 3 years now, you know, they're so worried about getting it so thin. Oh, it's got to be slim and trim. No, get it a little thicker. The minute you get a phone anyways, you're usually putting a darn case on it to protect it.
Yeah.
So now it's thicker. Put it a couple more millimeters thicker and put a bigger battery in it.
I think it's a reasonable time to at least offer an option and see what the market thinks. To offer an option that says, oh, with this phone, you get an additional 4 hours of battery life. Standby. One of the other challenges cell phones have is that they attempt to compensate for cell phone networks that may not have great coverage.
Right.
So if you're in an area that has a real weak signal, you're not very close to a tower, your phone will amplify, it will listen harder.
Right.
For
exactly.
towers. And that takes more power to do. They're attempting to amplify a very weak signal internally so that they can make use of it. And mm-hmm. that takes extra battery too. So if you are in an area that does not have great coverage, you might see that your phone doesn't have the battery life that you might expect or that you might get otherwise if you are closer to a tower.
And it's easy to tell because you see how many bars you have.
Yep, that's right.
If you have few bars, you're using more energy. That's just the way these things work.
Simple math.
Right. Now, Apple and many companies, in fact, make backpacks, power packs.
Sure.
Right? That you can attach to the back of your phone.
That's right.
And give you extra power. How many of those do they sell? I suspect they sell a great number of them.
I think they probably do. And there are first-party ones that come from... Oh, boy. Dave's looking excited.
I just saw a new device.
Okay.
For people that, you know, you're out driving around. What it is, it's maybe about, I'd say, 4x5.
Okay, a little bigger than a Rubik's Cube.
And about an inch thick.
All right.
And what you do is unfold it.
Yes.
And it's solar panels.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's got the connector that you can hook up your phone.
Yeah.
So as
My
you're driving along, it's charging your phone, the cells, and charging your phone.
Yep. It's
yeah.
really cool.
Those are
yeah.
very cool. Those are very
yeah.
cool.
And when you're done, you just quick, you know, keep rolling it, and it flips and... like an accordion type of thing.
Yes.
Folds up.
And that's because solar panels have gotten more efficient.
Yeah.
As time goes on.
That's
they
right.
used to be like 10% efficient.
And
now they're
fast.
Like 20.
It's super fast too.
Yeah, right.
As far as charging.
Now, in any other town other than Rochester where we have clouds all day long, you probably could do really well.
Thank you, Canada.
Well, yeah, this week it's Canada.
This week it's Canada. Oh.
Every
Most
other week. It's just
this
Rochester.
Week was
it's grim and depressing, right?
Wicked.
Yeah, no, it was bad news.
My kids just, you know, it was rough on them, you know, just the breathing issues.
I was wearing a mask when I went out.
A lot of folks were.
Yep.
All over. I know I was and a lot of other folks, too. You know, matter of fact, I had a couple, well, it's not COVID, I go, but no, there's all this smoke in the air.
Right.
Right.
Then, I don't need that in my lungs.
You got an AQI over 300 and you have to wonder what's up. Yeah,
well, at least we didn't get as dark as New York City. I mean, it was so bad that you couldn't see across the street.
Right. And I'm not sure how, at least downtown in Manhattan where all the buildings are, I'm not sure how quickly air flows around in that area.
Yeah.
So I hope that gets blown out.
If it's not coming down the streets or across the avenues, down the avenues and across the streets.
I know what you meant.
Yeah. You don't get a lot
of
breeze there.
May be different.
That's why every summer in August, the garbage men strike.
Yes.
Because that smell
it
just
smells worse.
Builds and builds and builds. In all the years I lived in New York City, you always found an excuse to not be in New York in August.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
But like you were saying, though, the charging units are getting more efficient and smaller.
Right.
That it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true. I would say if you are a listener and you're looking for a nice Father's Day gift for your favorite father or person that you are fond of, a battery backup power would be great. Look for something with 10,000 milliamp hours or better. I would say look in the you can get for under $100 a 40,000 milliamp hour battery pack.
Yep.
That'll help. You can charge your battery several times with that. Charge your phone several times, I should say. And that's a great thing to get. You can charge it up. You can leave it in your bag. And then when you're out and about and you realize, oh, my goodness, I left the house. I forgot to charge my phone last night. You plug that in and you're good to go.
I have a couple that are cylinders.
Yes.
And each one would charge my phone two or three times.
Yes, right.
So I tend to keep them charged, particularly when I'm going to be out all day long for whatever reason. And I haven't needed them yet, but the beauty is I don't worry now.
That's right. Yep. Those usually have those
just in case
18650 cells in them, and they last a long time between charges. So you can leave one in your glove box or in the bottom of your bag.
Yeah, exactly.
When you need it, there it is.
Exactly. And yes, you can charge your phone in the car. But if you don't, or if you're out of the car for 6, 7, 8 hours and using your phone extensively, it's nice to have that little thing in your bag.
Yes.
In fact, I think it's in my
Or you're on a bike ride right or you're on a hike or what have you. That's, again, if you're on a hike and you're away from cell towers and your phone's been listening hard for the last hour and a half and
right.
trying to do its best for you, you know, you help it out with a little extra power from a battery bank.
All right. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Just like Jim did from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, I want to thank you very much for last week's program because I was just about ready to have my my laptop fixed when I heard someone talk about the missing mouse pointer.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Okay, well, I spilled a little bit of coffee on my USB port, and I thought maybe that's what happened, but it could have been a coincidence. But anyhow, I couldn't see visibly my mouse pointer on my laptop, and I played around, and I finally figured out that if I put the sensor in one of these auxiliary USB ports, that would work. But then what I did is, because I need my thumb drive to transfer from one place to the other, I put my thumb drive in the same unit, and then my mouse quit. So to make a long story short, I finally figured out through all the combinations of permutations that I can do what I need to do with my mouse pointer. But my other laptop, which has now Windows 11, the same thing happened. And I cannot figure out how to get that mouse pointer more visible. And I've looked it up on the internet, and there's all kind of problems that people, this is a known problem.
But so, Jim,
yes.
Is the mouse pointer invisible or just too small?
No, it doesn't show up. I got to use the mouse. I got to use the touchpad. And, of course, the touchpad drives me nuts.
So that when you use the touchpad, you see the mouse pointer.
Exactly.
And when you use the mouse, it doesn't. Is this the same mouse you're using on both systems?
No.
Two different mice. Okay.
But if you look it up, there's all kind of cures. One of them says you go to settings and you found my mouse and then turn it back on. Well, there's as near as I can figure out, there's no such thing. But anyway, there's nothing happens with my new laptop with Windows 11. The mouse just does not show up.
Interesting. Okay.
But the interesting thing is because, like I told you, I've had a lot of experience, like, Three days. Who's got 3 days to figure out where your mouse is?
All right. Question for you, though. Now, this has a little mouse sensor pad built into the keyboard?
Yes.
A little touchpad. Is there a keyboard combination, in other words, the FN key and another key, to turn that off?
What? That's it. I don't know. That. I don't know. That's,
it
that's
would be. It would be. There would be little icons on these buttons as you look across.
Right.
And one of them would be for turning off the touchpad.
Sometimes they're in blue or now whatever color FN key is labeled in.
Where do I look?
The FN keys across the top of the keyboard.
Okay.
On those, there are also icons.
Little pictures.
One of them might be a mouse, which would turn the mouse on and off.
Wait a minute. Let me look.
Wait.
No,
finish.
Hold up.
Jim, we've got other people calling.
Yeah, we may not be able to do this in real time with you.
Yeah. So there also might be one that's a little square with a line through it that turns on and off the mouse pad.
Okay.
So try both of those to see if, in fact, it's just the fact that your mouse is turned off. Now, depending on what laptop you have, particularly some off brands and some older brands,
right,
actually have a switch that turns on and off the mouse, often on the side. Make sure that that's not, that you don't have one of those.
Yeah,
or that it's
on
not
the Windows
off.
11 machine.
Probably not,
but certainly doesn't hurt to look.
But the other one might.
Yeah. So do those things and then let us know. We've got to get on to other calls.
You can give us a call back.
Okay, Doug. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's hard when it's...
It's a hardware.
It's a hardware issue that doesn't have...
Done?
A reasonable...
Yep, down where
you're
going.
Instant fix.
Right. No, yeah. It's tricky. If maybe the make and model, if we had that.
Okay, hold on.
Right.
Look for a graphic of the keyboard.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people don't like the mouse pads. I prefer them, personally.
Yeah. I like them a lot. I think they're convenient, and I like to be able to use multiple fingers on them for different shortcuts. Plus, I just love saying the key that has the FN on it and calling it the FN key.
Yeah.
I used to, in a job I had, my cubicle was across from my boss's door. That was a thrill.
Uh-huh.
But he took to calling me F1 whenever he had a question or a problem.
Ask for help?
Yeah, he'd ask for help. And I'd be sitting at my desk and hear, F1! F1! Okay, thank you very much. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. Back to one of your favorite subjects. Password managers.
Okay.
Couple basic questions. I'm exploring these, and I think you still highly recommend one called EnPass.
ENPASS.
Oh, it's EN. Okay. Question. Do you, in setting one of these up, do you have to put in the password that you are currently using for all of your accounts and then establish one master password from which all of those accounts are accessed and filled in when needed?
Yes. Yes. Oh, a password manager does have to be filled in. That's the point of a password manager. And once you have, look, you've got a lot of passwords.
Yeah. Think of
hopefully
it like
hopefully none of them are identical. But in whatever, they shouldn't be. That's
ideally.
That's how you get hacked. We've said that many times. So what happens is a password manager lets you have massively long, massively complex passwords without you having to do any work. That's the beauty of password managers.
And since he's doing this from scratch, one thing I would interject. Since, I would go to each of these sites. That maybe you've made up the password.
Yes.
And go to the part where you can change the password. With EnPass set up, have EnPass create a new complicated password. And so you would go to, say you went to PayPal. And you put in you want to change your password. So you'd put in your old password and it asks you for a new one. You would go over to EnPass and say, generate me a password.
Yep.
And it would generate a complicated password. You would copy that out of EnPass after you.
And there's a button that lets you do that. It's just a copy button.
Yep. And you copy it. You go back over to PayPal. paste it in there. Now you've got this nice, long, complicated password there. You go back to EnPass and say, yep, save this, and you'll do all the labeling and all that type of stuff to fill out the information for that account. So the next time you go to PayPal, all of a sudden EnPass will pop up. You just say, yeah, use this for PayPal. It automatically fills it in for you, and it's a nice, long, complicated password that's not going to be compromised.
And yes, Don, it does take a lot of work at the beginning.
Time, yeah, but...
I get that, but it means you're now more secure.
Oh, tons infinitely, more.
Infinitely more secure.
Right.
Okay, let's back up one point. I've got, say, like 20 different accounts, and I do use duplicate passwords. I have probably about 8 different passwords, all of them rated as quite secure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I, one of the approaches, and I understand what you said about having EnPass generate new ones, but the other approach, if I chose not to do that, I assume I would need to put in the existing password for each one of those accounts to establish an EnPass master. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, you need to enter each one of those individual passwords for all those individual sites into EnPass. Mm-hmm. Think of those like putting cans on a shelf, right, in a cabinet.
Yeah.
And the master password is the thing that padlocks the cabinet closed, right? So the master password, all it does is unlock and allow you to access all of the contents, all of the individual pieces that live within inside your password vault.
Okay. Now, the other thing that's going on here and is very handy is that a great number of these accounts, the password, when I go to access the account, the computer, Microsoft Windows, has already remembered. And how secure or insecure is that?
Right. Browsers came along before password managers were really commonplace and popular. And browsers over the years have worked carefully to become more and more convenient for users to use.
Mm-hmm.
They will, among other things, store your first and last name, your address, your potentially a credit card number, et cetera, mailing address. And they will also store passwords to get into various sites. The encryption that they may or may not use, depending upon which browser it is, may not be good enough. One of the advantages to using a password manager is that you can install that same software across multiple machines, and the password vault itself is often stored with the EnPass or whatever the manufacturer's cloud services are, and you can access that vault of passwords from multiple different machines.
That's my last final question, and that is transferring. In my case, I'm spending 3 months of the year elsewhere, mm-hmm. Taking a laptop there, a desktop here at home.
Mm-hmm.
Setting this up in my office, and then how difficult is it to get the whole vault, EnPass, whatever, transferred and operable on the traveling laptop?
What you can do is, in EnPass, you can say, hold on, we got to take a break. Stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Don from Pittsford on the line. Still there, Don?
Yes, I am. Like the Wichita lineman, I'm still on the line.
Line. Great. Now that song's going to be stuck in my head all day. Thank you, Don.
One of my favorites. Anyway. Yeah.
So you were asking about saving it
setting it up so you can use it on laptops and
somewhere online.
Yeah, the difficulty or lack thereof in copying from one computer to another.
Right. So the way EnPass works is one of the things you can do is say, I want to save my already encrypted password vault online somewhere. And you can pick the somewhere. It could be Google Drive. It could be iCloud. It could be Microsoft OneDrive. It could be Box. It could be Dropbox. There's a hundred of them out there. And you say, I want to save it there. Now you go to another machine, you install EnPass there, and you log in with your username and password. And EnPass says, oh, you're saving your vault on OneDrive. Okay, I'll just bring it in, and now you can use it here.
Yeah.
And if I make, I do that. I have it on my desktop, my laptop.
My phone.
My phone, sure. My tablet. So if I make a change or add a password to one of them, it appears on all of them automatically.
Mm, okay, that's good news.
Yeah.
Plus, it's safer, too, just so you know, Don, because, you know, you're saving it up on the cloud. It's encrypted, so if anything ever happened to your computer that, you know, it crashed or that, you're not losing everything. It's literally backed up out there on the cloud where it's safe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of relative safety, we spoke a little earlier about the browser remembering passwords.
Yeah.
That seems to be a vault or whatever you'd call it for probably about 80% of my accounts. Is to leave or continue and expand that, is that still fairly safe compared to a password manager?
Not nearly as safe as a password manager.
Not even close.
In addition, almost every browser lets you look at all the passwords.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. So pretty much anybody sitting at your machine would be able to look at all the passwords. That's probably not terribly safe.
Okay. All right. And finally, tell me again the spelling of EnPass.
EnPass.
EnPass. Okay, and in terms of password managers, do you feel that this is the preferred program or are some easier to set up from scratch than others?
None of them are easy to set up from scratch, Don. You do have to put in all the passwords.
And yeah. Time.
That's simply okay. The way that works.
Yeah, it's however, time and effort.
However, of all of them, this is the one I prefer.
Same
for
here.
The things we've talked about. Saving it online, pre-encrypted, letting it be available on every one of my devices instantly,
mm-hmm.
All of that stuff is the reason I prefer EnPass.
Did you mention that sometimes these password managers have the ability to import?
They do, and I don't honestly know if they can import from
Edge or whatever the
browser
is.
What browser are you using?
We'll take a look and we'll look it up for you.
Don, what?
What's the one that comes with Windows 10?
Edge.
Microsoft Edge?
Yeah, Microsoft Edge. That's what I'm using principally. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can export your passwords from Microsoft Edge and then import them into EnPass.
That at least gets you the started.
Started. But they're all still, now you've already said that you
weak.
Duplicate passwords and that they're weak. So you do want to change them all at some point. But that gets you started.
Okay. Well, there are some duplicates, but they're all strong. At least that's the rating that I get. Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for this information. And again, you're doing an outstanding job.
Thank you so much. We like to hear that, Don. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right. And you, too, can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And if you go to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you can see all of the places that you can listen live. You can, of course, hear us on the air. You can listen via the web at jazz901.org. You can download the Jazz 90.1 mobile app. You can listen on your smart speaker. You can watch us on our YouTube channel. You can see us on 50 other things. That's true. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere. I would say one additional thing that I thought of with our previous caller is he mentioned a couple of times that the passwords he's currently using were, he believes, the rating for those was strong. And I say that's fabulous. It's good that you're using long, complex, difficult to guess passwords. The challenge is that he also said that they're also being reused. And that essentially cancels out the strength part.
Exactly.
The strength part is it hard to guess, or will it take a computer a long time to programmatically generate that password and attempt it? The reused part is a big gotcha. That means if there is a leak or a data breach in any one of the places where you
and not on his machine,
nope.
But at the other end,
right.
At his bank or at you know PayPal or wherever he's using,
whichever vendor you're interacting with or online store or what have you, if those have a breach and they know they get Don last name and they get Don last name's big long unique password, then. What happens is the bad guys get that big list of breached data and they go try every other website with Don last name and his email address and that password. And because the password has been reused, they're going to say, oh my goodness, fantastic. We just got into this other website that didn't have the data breach because he used the same password in two different places.
Yep.
So that's why we say using complex, long passwords that are unique between websites is the way to go. They must be different between them. That way, when there is a data breach, not if, but when, you are still in control of all of your other accounts. You only have one password to change, and you can move on with life. The moment you start reusing passwords between multiple places, your life gets a lot more annoying and a lot less fun.
Yep, and they are testing these sites at computer speeds. You can't keep up.
Yeah,
If you've got the same password on two sites, they're both compromised. Done. There's no question about that.
Yes.
In addition, when we say long, the minimum these days 17 characters, and really 18 now.
Yeah,
I have to say, with the click of the generate button in MPass, I create 64 character passwords.
Yep.
Simple.
Upper, lowercase,
numbers, symbols,
punctuation.
Everything.
It's all there. It does it. I don't even know if I got taken to a back room in the dark and had a bag put over my head and a light bulb and they tore it off and they said, grabbed a piece of rebar and pointed at me and said, give me your password for this. I'm sorry, guys. I couldn't do it if I wanted to.
Right. I don't know my password.
I don't know them. I can't help you with that.
The other thing is you can, if you're really paranoid, and I am.
Hello.
You can download and save your vault somewhere else.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I not only have my vault online, but I also have it on a thumb drive.
Sure.
So if I really need it, and it is unavailable anywhere else.
Right.
I've got that thumb drive.
Now let's say something, I'm going to go slightly dark, but let's say a horrible accident happens. And your wife suddenly needs access to these accounts. What type of approach do you have in place your wife? You love dearly.
Whom I love dearly. I have put MPass on her machine.
Okay.
And given her the master password.
Very good.
So at any time, if she needs to, she can get at all my stuff.
Yeah, same here. If I got hit by a runaway garbage truck,
right.
Sandy could log in. And know all my passwords get into banking and anything.
Yep.
Because I literally put every password. I mean, it might be a site I might not use, but once a year.
Or it's once ever.
Yeah. It's in there.
Yep.
Just so it's taking up space. Up there on the cloud. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. And so we talk now about the fact that people are, there's a point at which you are going to no longer be here.
Believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. And, back in the day.
Not that we're rooting for that.
Not that we're rooting for that. Back in the day, your lawyer had a will, blah, 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 blah. What do about all those passwords and all those sites and all my banking information and all my medical information and all the other things that people are going to need? my wife has access to that, and in my case, so does my daughter, because they have NPAS.
That's right. People you trust, people you love,
people
can
you
get
trust,
that.
People you love, or you say to your lawyer, NPAS is on my machine, and in this sealed envelope is the password.
Yep.
And upon my death, give it to X.
And they'll do it.
And they'll do it.
Yes.
That's what lawyers are for.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful thing when your spouse or your family is mourning your loss, hopefully.
Hopefully.
We all hope. What a wonderful gift to have them. One fewer thing to have to deal with or figure out.
Exactly right.
It's just handled.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good afternoon, guys. A few things, mostly small. First, did you do a recording of last week's show?
There wasn't a show. No, mute your mic if you're going to be playing with that thing.
Yeah.
Please.
Hang on.
Sorry,
thank
I
you.
I did.
Yeah. Sorry, we did. There, last week was a pre-recorded show.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Then I don't need to keep searching for it.
Right. Yes.
I imagine the podcast feed.
Oddly, every once in a while over the last, 32 years, magically, all three of us are not available on a Saturday.
It does happen.
It's rare, but it does happen. And last week was one of those weeks.
My goodness. You mean you guys have lives?
It is unbelievable.
Occasionally.
And it turns out there's only one Dennis to sit in when only one person's missing. There are not three of me.
And just, Dennis does not know how to run the board.
I do not. I would be, hitting things like a monkey. It would not be a good idea.
Okay.
He would not end up with Shakespeare, trust me.
Nope, not even close.
Okay, go ahead, Ed.
Okay, second thing is, I don't see the phone number on your webpage.
Well, we can give it to you now.
When I called you, I found it, but not on your page. I had to go to the 90.1 page.
Yes, the 91.1 page will have that, and
I should put the phone number on our page.
It used to be on your webpage before it was redesigned.
Yeah, it probably did. Well, I'll put it back.
Thank you for that suggestion.
Put it back if I don't leave it a note for myself, but thank you. I will do that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Third thing is, even though it's not a pledge drive, I want to urge people to contribute money.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
I throw you $100 a year. Once or twice a year when I can, and it's usually not during the pledge drive.
Very nice.
So
thank you.
I encourage other people to do that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, the real reason for my call...
Oh, here we go.
Is
buttering this up.
Yeah.
Right. What's a good way to clean the screen and keyboard of my MacBook?
Do you have a sandblaster?
Hang on. down, boys.
It was gross, but what happened is that I coughed while I had food in my mouth.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I've been there.
So here's what I recommend. Go get yourself a microfiber cloth.
Uh-huh.
You can get those at any local retail establishment of your choice. And I do think you can moisten it gently with a little bit of water. We're not trying to saturate the cloth, but just a little light mist. This, in fact, if you have the same thing you would use to spritz your eyeglasses.
I was going to say, first shouldn't he, though, Dennis, get some, canned air?
Canned air to get the dust stuff off, and then come at it with the microfiber cloth. Mm-hmm. That does a great job on the glass screens that Apple uses. I would say turn the laptop off first and then go for the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way off.
Yes.
Not just
asleep.
Right.
One other thing that we used to do is, do you have a shop vac?
Just a big one.
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm waiting to see where you go with this.
With the shop vac, usually you have the attachment that has the brush on it.
Yeah.
So if you put the brush on there and turn it on and run it across the keyboard, it will suck up because shop vacs have fantastic sucking power that it will pull stuff out even underneath it. And with the little brush, because it's a round thing, maybe about 2.5 inches in diameter, that brush also helps, as you're running it across there, to loosen anything up in between the, how the key has that little slot?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll help loosen that up. And with the suction of the shop vacs, that used to pull stuff out like you wouldn't believe.
What about static?
Static can be an issue. I think static's a bigger issue if you're using a home vacuum that might have a metal tube.
But this is plastic.
Plastic might be better.
Right.
I would say a shop vac would not be my first choice. I understand that Dave's got his preference.
Yep.
I can tell you that Amazon does sell, what do they call that? They call it display cleaner spray. And usually it's like partially rubbing alcohol, partially reverse osmosis water. And that does a good job of taking the fingerprints and other things off of your screen. That plus the microfiber cloth is what I use day to day at work, where I work. And that works just fine. Also works great on tablets, especially tablets that might be passed around by a whole bunch of people with fingerprints. And it works great on phones, too.
What I would recommend, once he does get it clean, you can buy those skins that go over the keys.
Yeah, you can.
And those are so handy for people. If they're in the habit, and I recommend it for a lot of folks, that'll wind up eating stuff over their keyboard because of the laptop. You know, it could be just crumbs that are hanging there. All of a sudden they get
crackers,
down.
Granola bar.
Yeah. I mean, you know, stuff does get down there. I mean, we can't help it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're busy working on your computer, stuff gets in there. And these skins, you can buy them. I saw that one that Steve had, and I wound up getting one for my laptop. Vacverse, and I love it because it's very flexible, but it keeps all the junk, dirt, and everything else out from it.
Yeah, it's kind of like car mats for your, your keyboard.
Yep.
And they stay in place, too. They're
They're not terribly expensive.
No, I think I paid less around $20.
Right, and it'll last forever.
Yeah,
yeah.
Until you get a new key, laptop. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's what we can recommend there.
Yeah, eyeglass cleaner for the screen.
Yeah, that's good too.
And maybe not a whole shop vac.
And don't spray it on the screen. Spray it on
spray
a cloth.
It on the cloth.
Oh, right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And a little goes a long way. I would say don't overdo it. You don't want anything that's going to drip or run.
Yeah.
So just a light spritz.
Right.
Okay, got it. Very good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, I clean my my screen fairly regularly. I have had Ed's event happen to me too.
Yes.
Where you cough while you have a mouthful of food, and it's definitely clean your screen time.
Yep. Or a particularly funny joke.
Or a particularly funny joke, or you know exactly.
I would say, the biggest challenge with liquid or other things is liquids that happen to have sugar in them, whether it's corn syrup or something else.
Yep.
People come to me and say, hey, I spilled some soda. And I say, by any chance, was it diet soda? Because then maybe it doesn't have corn syrup or sugar in it.
Yeah,
right.
Because that you can usually clean up, but the sticky stuff might as well be pancake syrup. Because
that's exactly right.
It's going to be a problem.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill. From Greece, New York. Hi, Bill. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I've been a Linux user for a while, and I just saw something about an immutable Linux distribution.
Yep.
I use Arch Linux right now, which is a rolling release. Would I gain anything by going to a immutable? And what is an immutable Linux distribution?
Okay, so here's the deal. This is a great story.
Let's start off with the word. What does immutable mean?
Right. Immutable means unchangeable.
There you go.
And what it basically means is that your system is secure from bad guys getting in and changing some of the underlying code. This is essentially what a Chromebook does. Mm-hmm. A Chromebook is essentially an immutable Linux kernel. It cannot be changed by the user. So that's how you know a Chromebook is secure. Now, the folks at Linux are the people who do the various Linux distribution. Linus Torvalds, who creates the underlying Linux that everybody uses, has said, this is a great idea. We're going to do it, too. And so they're putting out an immutable Linux kernel that is unchangeable, except, of course, in certain circumstances. Just like you can update a Chromebook, you will still be able to update Linux, but it's a more involved process, which means that it is much harder for the bad guys to do it. That's an immutable Linux kernel. That also goes along with all the new ways of installing software, Flatpak and Snap and whatever the other one is that people are using, which is up until now, the way Linux worked was the way Windows and the Mac work. You install a piece of software and it just goes into the machine and you're done. With Flatpak or Snap, when you install a piece of software, you actually are installing the environment that that software runs in. And it doesn't touch the kernel. So, A, it's much easier for a programmer to write a program when they control everything. But also, if Dennis and I both write programs, and my program now has the ability to screw up his program accidentally.
Right.
But if each of us is in our own little container, it doesn't matter how badly I wrote my code, I can't screw up Dennis's program. So we're seeing both of those things, the containerized Linux and the immutable Linux kernel. And I believe it's the next main version of Linux that's going to be immutable, or maybe it's the one after that, and I don't remember at this moment. But that's what that basically means. It is a hardened, unchangeable kernel. And of course, like I said, it's not entirely unchangeable forever, but the way you change it will be so complex that it involves a couple of steps that you, the user, has to do.
Right.
That it would not be doable by a hacker with a program. Is that clearer?
Yeah. Is it something I should run to, or is
Well, you're going to get it eventually anyway with either the next update or the one after that, the next major set of updates from both Ubuntu and Fedora, as far as I know. Not Fedora, Red Hat.
You said it was an Arch user. Is Arch already doing that?
I think Arch is already doing that, okay. I think. And I think that this is a very good thing, because what it means is now these systems are going to be heading toward the security of a Chromebook. You know, you'll still be able to break into an old Linux. You'll still be able to break into Windows. You'll still be able to break into a Mac. But with an immutable Linux kernel, you will find it as difficult to break into Linux as you do to break into Chrome, which so far, hasn't been done.
And you know the bugs came from Google in that case. They didn't come from some other third-party software that was making problems.
Right. And it's much easier for the programmers to fix things.
Right, because they know nobody's messing with it.
Nobody's messed with it. Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. I think immutable Linux is coming either next year or the year after. I have 2025 in my head, but
okay,
maybe I'm wrong about that. But it's coming, and I personally think it's going to be a very good thing. We get a lot of people who are very angry about Flatpak and Snap and containerized software. But you know what? If it makes it easier for a program. We don't have Photoshop on Linux.
Right.
And part of that reason is the fact that it's a pain in the patoot to write code for 200 different Linuxes.
Sure.
If I can write a containerized version that runs everywhere, it's going to be much easier for me as a program to say, yeah, I can go to Linux.
All the old things are new again. It sounds a lot like the Java virtual machine.
Yeah, it's VM all over again.
Yeah. It's more like Docker, but...
Yeah. Exactly. All right, we're going to take... the whole first hour of this show is done. Is that unbelievable or not? It is unbelievable, but it's happened. We're going to be back in a little while with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites. Take a bio break. Enjoy yourself. But come back for another hour of Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show.
Here we go.
Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And our caller, at the moment, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415, just like Al did from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, top of the morning to you guys.
And the rest of the day for yourself.
Hey. I got so many things. I missed your show last week.
No, you didn't. So did we.
Well,
but bum.
The funny thing is, I was listening to it and going, it sounds a little familiar. And then you said, oh, here's a call. Or here's our first caller, and it was me.
Yeah. And you thought, it's radio magic.
It's something.
Mind telepathy.
This AI is getting fantastic these days.
Too good. Hey, bunch of little comments, just observations, and probably taking you back to the LastPass discussion. But before I do that, do mention to people if they've got concerns over moving to 11 that Steve Gibson's In Control program, that which is free, will help lock their system down and prevent any changes.
Steve Gibson at grc.com. Writes some pretty amazing programs, one of which is that In Control program that was that the one that used to be called Never 10 or something?
Well, it's a whole new program, but it's the same concept.
Yeah, same concept. And it lets you decide whether or not you're going to upgrade. That's both good and bad. It's good because it means you get to keep what you already have and know and like. It's bad because Microsoft is going to stop supporting older versions. And at some point, you're going to be so far behind that, A, you can't upgrade because Microsoft will say no. And B, you are wide open to every bad guy out there. So there's, it's up to you to decide, but make a wise decision.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
Sure. Well, I'm in the camp of let me make choices about how my life is going to go, and if I shoot myself in the foot, then I'll be the one limping around. It's my own fault.
Right. But you're willing to take responsibility for yourself, and I get that.
What
and that's
concept.
Good.
Yeah.
Another topic, you got into a conversation with a gentleman about Revo uninstall.
Mm-hmm.
And just one little added note of all the things about you cautioned the person about is not a bad time to do a full backup before touching Revo uninstall if you're not sure what you're doing.
Yeah, anytime you use any uninstaller, do a full backup before that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Generally, anytime you make that kind of change to your system, any sort of unusual change, back it up.
Yep. Now, on to password managers. Oh, boy. One of the features, and I am still a LastPass user, I'm still on the fence about whether I'm going to make a change or not. I think I protected myself enough. But LastPass, and I suspect the others, also offers a timeout feature so that if you enable LastPass and then walk away from your computer for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever you set, it will automatically log you out and not leave you up and vulnerable to someone wandering by your PC, which is something people may want to look at.
Right. That's absolutely right. So you can turn it, you can open it up and use it, but after X, it will lock itself.
Right.
And then you'll have to put the password in again or your fingerprint if it's on your phone or whatever.
Yep.
And that's a very good feature. I tend to set mine very low. I don't mind typing in my password again. But again, that's personal preference.
Sure. And two other thoughts. If this will help attract people to the necessity, but also the convenience of a password manager, mine will let me not only designate that if I don't do anything, if I get hit by a bus or whatever, and my wife needs access, she can request access, and after a set period of time, like maybe a week, if I don't say no, she will be given full access. So there's, it eliminates a little bit of the worry about, well, yes, I put the secret password in an envelope to the lawyer, but that was last year, and I've changed the password a couple of times since then. I've forgotten to tell the lawyer about that.
Right.
Which is kind of handy. But here's the real seller. The ability to share passwords with people, such as like my Netflix account, so I can give them access. If they have LastPass, they can have access to use my Netflix access, but they don't necessarily know what the password is or how they cannot change it. So they have the convenience of being able to use my accounts and their access.
Yep, that's very nice. Of course, we hasten to say that sharing passwords is illegal with Netflix, and we do not recommend you do it.
Oh, well, this is only for people within my household, of course.
Yeah. Of course it is.
Of course, the fact that they've tightened down the screws on that means that I'm no longer going to be paying a premium for 4 active accounts at one time. I'm going to cut it back to 2.
They had it on the news today that their membership went up 100%.
Yeah.
Since people all of a sudden clamped down on it,
yep.
Membership went up over 1 million accounts.
Yep.
Because there so many folks were passing it around to this friend or that friend, and kids at college would, you know, pass it around the dorm, and everybody was watching, and Netflix was losing out.
No, I can't begrudge them. I think, you know, it's fair is fair.
Yeah, it's their system. They can do what they want.
Yep. Anywho, that's my 3.5 cents. Thank you again for your show. I look forward to it, and I try to listen live, but I do make use of your recordings.
Good. That's why they're there.
Yeah.
So, thanks.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks, Al.
Okay. Thanks for the kind words, Al. Have fun.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, everybody was so worried that Netflix was worried that because of tightening down that it was going to lose membership. And it's like, no. It finally made people who really enjoy Netflix that much to sign up for it and increase their membership.
That's exactly right.
That's great. No, like you say, it's a service, and you should pay for it if you want it.
That's right. And they have the right to do what they want with their system. If you don't like it, don't use it.
Well, that's like we say the same with software. You know, same thing applies. You know, if you're using it in that, pay for it.
Right.
It helps keep the programs going and alive and other features being added.
Yep. No, I absolutely agree. There's no reason not to pay for the software that you're using. I'm sorry, there just isn't.
Yep.
And we all wish it were different. We'd all love everything to be free all the time forever, but it isn't.
Especially like, you know, the super anti-spyware and the malware bytes and the AVG, support them.
Right.
You know, they do a great job of keeping on top of things that are trying to overtake your machine. Because the bad guys are out there constantly. It's like a game of leapfrog, trying to get around this barrier so they can jump over that and get in and steal information. That's how they make their money nowadays. Virus writing has just about gone. But the key thing is getting into their machine and stealing passwords, personal information. And you might, like Nick has said countless times, oh, I don't have anything worth stealing. Just your identity. That's a gold mine.
Yep.
If they can steal your information, oh, they can open credit cards, store accounts, and everything else. So just don't think, you know, well, I've got nothing. Yeah, you do. You've got your ID, and that's worth protecting.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly right. All right, I'm going to read a news item while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Google has confirmed that a zero-day security vulnerability in its Chrome web browser is being actively exploited and has issued a rare emergency security update in response. Although Chrome security updates are not per se the rarest of beasts, updates that fix a solitary, actively exploited zero-day vulnerability are far from the norm. You can be sure that when such an emergency security update drops, it's time to take it seriously and ensure your browser has been protected. In a June 5th announcement posted to the Chrome releases blog, Google said the fixes will roll out in the coming days and weeks. Although the announcement says the 2 security fixes are included in this update, only one is actually detailed. CVE 2023-3079 is a Type confusion vulnerability in the V8 JavaScript engine, and Google's own threat analysis group discovered the vulnerability. While that is all the technical information that Google is releasing at the moment so as to allow time for the update to be rolled out to as many users as possible, there is one published detail that is critical. Google is aware that an exploit for CVE-2023-3079 exists in the wild, which means you shouldn't play the waiting game, but instead go check that your browser has indeed been updated. The very act of going to check on your Chrome version number will generally kickstart a download and installation of a security update if it has reached you already. However, to activate the update, you must restart the browser, not your home machine.
Right, just the browser.
This latter point is crucial for those of you who tend to have hundreds of tabs open.
Yeah!
Or dozens of tabs open and rarely close the browser at all. You can, of course, bookmark all your open tabs at once and then open them all again later. If you're wondering whether or not your non-Chrome, other Chromium-based web browsers are also impacted by this zero-day security vulnerability, the answer is a resounding yes. The good news is there are updates to patch all those issues already rolled out for most of the major Chromium-based browsers. First off, the block was Vivaldi, followed by Microsoft Edge and Brave. It looks like Opera users may have to wait a while longer for protection against this potentially very harmful exploit that's already out there in the real world. As for Microsoft Edge, the updated browser number you are looking for is 114.0.1823.41, or, of course, higher. As with Google Chrome, users are advised to check to be sure. Look and see, you know, what your browser version is, to see if it's no longer vulnerable. And Chrome OS has, yes, you guessed it, a security update for that as well. Are all your browsers up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, even though I close, you know, I don't shut my machine down. The one thing I always do, though, is once I'm done using the browser, I shut the browser down. Yeah, I don't trust anybody, you know. And, yeah, granted, I have a lot of tabs open, but they're only active when I have the browser. Once I leave the machine or that, yeah, that's shut down automatically. I've done that for decades. You know, I don't trust it because there's ways, you know, I'm sure that they could find a way in through one of the other tabs that I have open and get into my machine. Ain't happening.
Yep. And you can very easily, in most browsers, there is a bookmark manager. Yep. And almost all of them, one of the choices on the menu is bookmark all tabs.
Right.
And then it asks you for a name. You know, when I'm doing research on something, I usually name it the date and the research topic. And so I can go back to that one and say, okay, I was here and these were all open and this is all good.
Is that the same as a tab group? Or is that a different thing?
It's different in that what it does is it creates a folder with all those tabs in it.
I see.
So you can then say, you know, right-click on the folder and say open all tabs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't group them on the screen. It groups them in a folder so that they all open again.
I see.
Yeah, see, in Chrome, I've got it set up. If you go into settings and I think it's default browser. No, browser settings. You can see all the bookmarks that you have open. And if you like the way that they're arranged, you can say, click on it and say, use this as startup. And it'll save that whole group.
That's another way to do it. It's a very similar way. Yeah.
And it just saves it. And then that way, if I've got others open, so I shut it down, those are gone then when I reopen it, which is fine.
Right.
Like you say, you know, you get others that you're using for other types of research or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and because of the research that I do, I have groups of stuff I want to see now. Mm-hmm. So in my case, the way I'm doing it works better for me.
But no, I'm saying it for the folks that, you know, all of a sudden you get a site and all of a sudden it wants to pop open other windows and you're trying to shut it down and it won't. I just close the browser, reopen it, and it's back to my default set.
Yep.
Can't mess with it. Yep.
There are lots of features. I was talking to somebody the other day who had no idea you could bookmark sites.
Okay.
And I get it.
Oh, really?
It's not a thing that that everybody does. So nope. I get that. So I showed him how to do that, and he was very excited. So that was that was nice. You can not only bookmark sites, you can create folders of bookmarks.
True.
So that you can group things in a way. For example, I have a Soundbites folder, which has currently about 200 things in it. So I
can't. Well, before we knew about bookmarks, you know, you think about back to the 90s when you were surfing. If you wanted to find a site, you had to start at a place and remember the path with the links that you clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be dozens long to try and get to
it. We all had a document.
This was before Google.
Yep, we all had a document.
Right.
http://something that we would copy and paste into that into that document.
But if you knew how. But if you were teaching someone the first time, you know, you'd say, oh, first I went to this, and then I went to this, and then I went to this, and that's when I found this amazing thing. And then they'd explain to you how to get to it. But yeah, before people understood the concept of bookmarks or even the concept of how URLs worked, you know, it was, hey, I'm going to show you this thing that has this stuff you can click and to take you to somewhere
else.
That's
what made all the programs that started out before Google so useful. You'd go to a website that had a list of places to go.
Sure. Well, that's what made Yahoo as popular as it was in the 90s, is that it was a giant directory of sites. Now, the entire concept of that is completely ludicrous today, but at the time, there were many, many orders of magnitude fewer websites to visit.
And there were old programs, I can't think of the name all of a sudden, that did that. Archie?
Sure.
Archie was one, and a couple of others that did essentially that.
Oh, the wide area internet search and that type of thing.
Waze, right. All of those. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheat.
Tawaga.
New York.
There it is.
Hi, Joe, what's up?
Well, let's see. I think you might have been thinking of Gopher.
Gopher! Thank you!
Format that I don't think you could think of was App Image. That was Flatback and Snaps.
Right. You're right. That was the other one. App Image was another one. It's another containerized program.
Containers is something different.
I know. This was not for the technical people. This was just they make a container and give you the whole thing.
Yep. Just so people know. Anyhow, yep. I know this one guy is struggling with the concept of a password manager alone, but it's probably good to mention also enable two-factor authentication wherever you can.
Right.
That's even more secure. And what you were just recently talking about, Winget is a program that's built in these days to Windows OS that gives you a central place to do installations and updates. It's what we Linux people have been enjoying all along with Yum and Pac-Man and apt and all that.
Yep.
You do Winget install will install a particular piece of software, and there's a lot of them listed. Adobe Reader, Firefox, Chrome, there's a lot of them, and you can search through them with Winget search.
Right.
And that makes doing all your updates really easy because it's Winget update -all.
Yep.
And then you can get your system up to date as far as the add-on software, and then you go into the system updates, and you can update your OS itself.
Yep. And Winget is a free and open source package manager for both Windows 10 and Windows 11. It's a command line utility, which scares some people. But what it does is it lets you install or remove or configure, upgrade, whatever, applications. So, for example, if you want a package manager, you can say Winget, I believe it's search. Password.
Winget search.
And then it'll show you a list of them, and you say, oh, there's NPass. I like NPass, or whichever one you like, whatever, I don't care. And you say Winget install whatever that program is. And you're done. And you're going to have to put in your password and all like that. I get that. But that lets you run. It's called a package manager.
Yep.
And Linux has had it forever. Macs have it.
Yeah, we have it with Homebrew, I think is the most common one. Yep. And I think there's a couple of others. But, I'm very familiar.
And Windows has Winget. Yep. Thank you. Good point.
It's just that, you know, Adobe has their updater and Google has updater for Chrome and Mozilla has their Firefox updater. It's like all these disparate updaters. This is great to have it all in one place.
Right.
There's also another one, Chocolatey, but that you have to go get. Winget, I think, is included with Windows itself.
Very good.
Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh, yeah. You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah. The ability to manage everything with what's called a package manager is one of the features that is just amazing, and yet we don't think about it in our world because it's the way you do it.
Yeah.
But Joe is absolutely correct. In the Windows world, you update this program, you update that program, you update some other program, you update another program.
Right.
Or you can just say Winget update everything. Winget, Winget.
Right.
And suddenly you're done.
It's sort of like shopping at your department store versus going to all your specialty shops, right? You go to one place, exactly. You load up your cart with what you need, you check out, and you head back home versus going in and out and in and out and in and out to all the specialty shops to get your flowers and your bakery items and your other you know, shoes and what have you.
Yeah, but they're all the same products.
Yeah. One-stop shopping.
Right. Yeah,
it's one-stop shopping. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. I hear you talking about saving all your bookmarks when you have multiple tabs open, saving all your tabs.
Yeah.
There's an extension called Session Buddy that will save all your sessions. You can name them. You can save multiple sessions and edit them down to, like, a work session. So whenever you want to, and I have tons of sessions that I have saved up, and whenever I want to go back to a session with maybe 20 tabs open, I can click on that. It opens all those sessions, and it's pretty nifty.
Yep, it is. Neat. It is. It's very much the same. It's the same thing, only you do it in a different way. It's
exactly, handy tools.
Yeah, it's a very good tool. Thank you.
Yep, thanks. Okay, bye.
Yep, thanks. Bye-bye.
Good
to share Session
that.
Buddy.
Yeah, and we should tell callers, if you've got a great tool that you're using, we'd love to hear about it. So
we'd love to hear about
call.
It. We're always happy to
anything to make your
tools.
Life easier and simple, but not put your system at being compromised.
Right, right. And the reality is there's plenty of those out there. There's plenty of great programs out there, little utilities that make life easier for one thing. And isn't that the best way to do it? I have this tool that does this. I have this tool that does that. You don't use a hammer to screw in screws.
Nope.
You don't use a screwdriver to drive nails, generally.
Right.
use the right tool for the right job, and that makes life so much easier.
Well, here's a quick one before we go to break that I absolutely love, and I think I shared this with you in the past. It's a website called Camel, Camel, Camel. And you can use that when you go shopping at Amazon. You take the URL for the item that you want to buy. And let's say you want to know some details about it, some stuff that Amazon typically wouldn't tell you. Like, what's the price history on this? Is this the best price that it has ever gone to? Or has it actually gone up recently? And maybe I need to wait for a sale. And if you've got stuff that you've been meaning to buy, but you're not in a big hurry, and you know if you found a great price, you'd jump on it, but you wonder what's up. Pasting a link into Camel Camel Camel. I don't know why it's called this, but that's the name they chose.
You know, we're at the point where all the good names are taken.
Yeah. DNS. It's all DNS's fault, as usual.
Right.
So Camel 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 will give you some details and some history on the pricing at Amazon, but that would be great by itself, but it will also alert you if a price goes below a certain amount, and you can pick whatever that threshold is, and it will just send you an email.
Nice.
And say, hey, this thing you wanted to buy, it's, you know, $10 cheaper than it was last week, last time we checked.
Nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
You never know. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesca.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Still?
Yeah. No,
it's a good thing to be.
It's working out for me, though.
That's what counts. It is 34 minutes.
Sure, your
after
wife
the
appreciates
hour.
It. Yeah, your kids.
Yeah. No, hey, so far, so good.
So far, anyway.
Yeah.
Sound bites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Until she changes the locks.
Well, right. Yeah, I don't know what you've heard, but.
Oh, you didn't get the memo?
All right. You can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And now, the single most important announcement.
Drum roll.
To come out of WWDC 2023.
World War DC. Wait, no, that can't be right.
That can't be right. For iPhone users.
Yes, yes.
Texting curse words hasn't traditionally been an easy task.
Yes, go on.
With duck being the stand-in for many people's favorite F word.
Maybe.
But Apple announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference this week. Drum roll. That the G-rated auto correction will come to an end with its newest update. And literally, there were 5,000 news stories about this.
Yeah, yeah, because this is the news we need right now.
This is the most important piece of news to come out of WWDC.
Right.
The heck with the $4,000 headset thing. We don't care about that.
And presidents being indicted and
we don't care
war
about
happening.
Any of that.
And, yeah.
You can now use the F word. In text on Apple.
And I'm going to use a different F word, finally.
This, if
finally.
You believe, right, if you believe the number of news stories about it, is the single most important announcement from this year's WWDC. That change will happen in the upcoming iOS 17 and can't come fast enough for some of us.
Oh, my goodness. Which please, is set give me the beta. Where's the beta?
Where's the beta?
I got to have this.
Be a beta tester.
Which is set to debut sometime this autumn. The new autocorrect system will improve the experience every time you type with a state-of-the-art machine learning system that now includes a transformer language model.
Uh-huh.
So theoretically, at least, now an iPhone will learn whether or not you're a sweary person and let you be.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And for some people, it'll just start converting everything into cursing.
Right.
It goes too far.
Yeah. iPhone's autocorrect function
Mom,
has left some users...
what are you saying?
Right, right.
Calm down.
Right. iPhone's autocorrect function has left some users frustrated, spawning an ongoing series of damn autocorrect jokes around the world on virtually every social medium. It's even led to a dedicated Reddit page.
True.
Reddit is a whole other problem right now, but that's a separate story.
Yeah.
The new update will also allow users to revert back to the word they originally spelled out when autocorrect seems to think that they spelled something wrong just by tapping on the word in question. Predictive text will now also allow users to finish words and sentences by clicking on the space bar.
Right.
The autocorrect update is just one of several new upgrades and updates coming from Apple, including leaving messages on FaceTime and using FaceTime on Apple TV, search filters, live stickers. You can now do thumbs up and get an explosion in the background.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the single most important thing
goodness,
that a business
finally.
Meeting needs.
Yeah, I can mm-hmm. I can
thank
give a thumbs
heaven.
Up. Yes. Did you read the memo? Sure did. Kaboom.
Boom. Yeah, yeah.
That's
thank
what
you.
I need.
Thank you for interrupting our business meeting with that.
You're welcome.
So, how angry have you been at autocorrect? Give us a duck and call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
All right. I'll give you two picks. Now, I've not watched the entire keynote yet. I have not watched anything about the Studio Pro, but I have watched the stuff about iPadOS, macOS, iOS, tvOS.
Right, right, right.
I would say the two things that I'm excited about are, number one, being able to do FaceTime from my big TV in the living room by setting up my phone as the other camera and all that jazz. Second item will be finally getting Snoopy and Woodstock as a first-party watch face on my watch. Those are the two things I'm looking forward to. Everything else is gravy. Those are the two things I'm hoping for.
And, of course, the autocorrect.
Well, yes.
That goes without saying.
Well, it's obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, there were a lot of really important things done at WWDC.
Yes.
But what people love are the little embellishments, the little Phillips that...
The nuances
that get out there. That's what makes these operating systems fun.
That's right. Apple has a whole phrase for this. They call it surprise and delight.
Yeah.
And that's what they want to say. They want to get people to see that, oh, hey, that's cute.
Yep,
look at
exactly,
that.
Exactly. And that's what they've done. And that's the thing. And let us say that that is borne out every time one of those little tiny, what the heck is that feature all about?
Right.
Come out. People love it. And it's the thing they talk. Like I said, there's 10 times as many news stories about ducking.
Yes.
As there is about anything else that was announced at WWDC.
It's true.
Including the $4,000 headset or the new.
Hey, $34.99.
Excuse me. All right. $3,500 headset.
Let's be accurate.
I beg your pardon. I apologize.
That's all right. I know you didn't mean it.
You can buy two then.
Yeah. I can buy two now.
No, how many?
One for each eye.
How many Meta Quest 2s can you buy for that price? Like 10?
Right, exactly.
You can buy them for your family and your extended family, and you can all play to Beat Saber
the
together.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And get yet, as I said, people will be trying to figure out how to sell their firstborn in order to get one.
Oh, sure. To try it out.
Because it's an Apple product.
Yeah.
And they must have it.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, and keep one buy a second one. Keep it in the box. Back same way you did your original iPhone.
That's
I'm
right.
I'm still waiting to see. I like I said, I have not seen the demos of it yet. I'm cautiously optimistic. I want to believe that if anybody's going to get this right, Apple, all right, step zero, they have all the money.
Well, yes.
Like, I don't mean they have a lot of money. I mean, they have all the money.
They have all the money.
So if anybody has been studying or finding the right people to study these things and to make a product and try stuff out and think about the problem and how to solve them, I imagine it's this company. If there's a company that cares about how to interact with technology, Apple's got a pretty strong following, which admittedly they borrowed heavily from Xerox PARC in the 1970s and,
borrowed,
and 80s.
Yes.
Yes. So they care about this sort of thing. They also care about security. They're really big on that right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I want to believe that with all these things in, if this was a type of technology interaction that could be molded to help people or to do things in a better way, then they're likely to figure it out. That's what I want to believe.
Yep.
Now, admittedly, this is a first generation product. So, in much like the first generation iPhone that did not have copy and paste, I'm ready to believe that there are going to be a lot of limitations about this. And while I am excited, I was also excited about the Apple Newton in the 90s, which had its own collection.
I love the whole idea of the Apple Newton.
The Newton was a fantastic thing. It was just about 10 years ahead of its time.
Yep. And that's the thing about Apple. For everybody who voted in the poll at soundbites.org and voted meh, what you have to understand is in many cases, Apple comes out with something that isn't quite there yet, but shows the possibility. And to be honest, lots of other people jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Apple came out with the M1 chip.
True.
And it was a huge leap forward.
Yes.
And then
in performance per watt. Yeah.
In performance per watt. And then Google followed with the Tensor chip.
Yeah.
And it improved the abilities of a phone on the Android side as much as it did on the Apple side. And I think we're going to see the same thing with the Vision Pro. I think we've seen the same thing with a dozen different products that Apple has come out with. Their first version, look, it's just the same with Google, and it's just the same with Microsoft. Version 1 sucks.
You got to start somewhere.
Done. We all know that. Version 1 sucks.
Get it out, then fix it.
Get it out and let people play with it, because you don't know what they're going to do with it. People know what they're going to do with it.
That's
so
right.
So you get it out there in the public. Version 1 ain't great. And then version 2 comes out and it's better. But part of that is they've seen what people do with it. Hey, this Worcester guy created this great game. It doesn't work well because we don't have this.
Right.
Let's add this.
Oh, we could do that.
Lots of people want that.
Yeah.
So let's add this.
Yeah.
Version 2 gets this.
Right. And the next thing gets better.
And version 2 is better.
It also inspires other companies. You know, I don't know for sure if there would have been a Palm and a Palm Pilot and a Palm 5 and a Palm 3 or Palm Pre or what have you without there having been a Newton.
Yep.
And when you think about a Newton was however many hundreds of dollars it was.
Yep.
And it had literal handwriting recognition in the 90s. It had a capacitive touchscreen. It had side-loaded apps. It had the ability to connect it to telephone networks and put a modem on it to send faxes. It had infrared, what we used before Wi-Fi kids was infrared point-to-point to move data from one device to another, or to synchronize your contacts from one device to another. Palm kind of took that and figured out, well, let's do, you know, one third of all of this, but let's do it 10 times cheaper, and then let's put it in people's hands and see what happens. And what happened was, before cell phones got those pieces integrated, that was the weapon of choice for businesses everywhere who wanted to have notes and contacts and all of the other things in a handheld device that had a battery that lasted for a week and was very, very helpful.
Well, and the thing about Palm was they looked at what the Newton had done and said, these are the things people use most.
Right.
90% of the people use 60% of the product.
Yeah.
Let's put out 60% of the product.
Right. And we don't need the fantastic chip inside.
And do it well.
We don't need handwriting recognition. We'll just change. We'll let people write with graffiti instead, which is a modified handwriting. Right. And if you
People will learn that.
People will choose to learn that, and then they'll be able to put stuff in. Oh, and heck, we'll build an accessories which has a little nice fold-out keyboard that you could set it on and type stuff in if you prefer to type. But you need to be inspired by something. And the other thing that Apple does well is put out products that make people say, this is good, but... And then they think about it and try something else. And that's when technology companies are working at their best, is when they each get to kind of look and see what each other is doing, figure out what does the market need, what are the problems we can solve, what are the opportunities we can create for people, and then push something out.
And Apple has done that to themselves.
Sure.
They put out the Lisa.
Yeah.
And
it was $10,000 in 1983.
And then the company itself looked at the product and said, people use this 60% of it.
Right.
Let's build the Macintosh.
Yes.
And make it that 60%.
Right. And suddenly it's $2,500 instead of $10,000.
Instead of $10,000. And it does everything 90% of the people need.
Yes.
Which means you sell a zillion of them.
Right.
So, yes. And I absolutely get that. And we're going to see the same thing, I think, with the Vision Pro. I don't know how useful it's going to be in the real world, but for gaming and that stuff, the metaverse.
I'm still waiting to see what the killer app is, right? So we use this phrase in the tech industry called the killer app. And the killer app is, I want to do this amazing thing. Oh, this is the product I need in order to do that. Okay, fine. I will go buy that product. So the killer app for... in the 80s was desktop publishing, right? If you wanted to lay out newsletters, if you didn't want to have a post board, if you didn't want to set Linotype, you would go and get yourself a Mac and a laser printer, and suddenly you had a publishing business, and you could make flyers like a copy shop and do it all from
the original killer app was VisiCalc.
Yes, that's right. If you needed a computer to do lots and lots of calculations for you, you didn't want to sit there with a calculator and do them by hand, you could develop something called a spreadsheet and develop the math that happens based on the inputs you provide over here, and it does all the math and can help you make projections.
I cannot
and
tell
it
you
can
how
also
many,
craft it for you.
Yep, that's right.
I cannot tell you how many Apple IIs I sold with VisiCalc. People would come into the store and say, I need VisiCalc.
See,
that's all. They don't even care what it runs on.
Right.
I could have handed them a duck and said, this runs VisiCalc. Give me the duck.
Yes, quack, quack. Let's go.
Quack, quack, let's go.
Where's the duck food?
That's all they cared about was VisiCalc. I cannot count the number of Apple IIs I sold with VisiCalc.
And you said, right this way, my fine man.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Come here, little boy.
I have everything you need.
Exactly.
You come to the right place.
Exactly. So, yeah, and it is the killer app.
So what's that going to be?
That's a very good question.
Now, I have an idea. You know, Apple had their Google Glass thing was roughly 10 years ago, and Microsoft's been working with HoloLens, which is more of a, if I remember right, it's more of a like a half a face shield, a transparent face shield that they project onto the internet.
Yeah, it's more like Cyclops.
The thing that I personally think will be the killer app for all of us that have that suffer from CRS, which is when you can't remember things.
Yes!
So let's say I go out to the supermarket and suddenly there's this guy pushing the cart, two carts ahead of me. And I'm like, oh, I know that dude, but what's his name?
facial recognition.
What is his name?
Yes.
And above his little head is projected, oh, that's Bill Smith. Yeah, Bill Smith, that's right. I worked with him three jobs ago, and what a great guy. He had that Corvette, and he said he would come over and show it to me sometime, and I want to ask him, hey, do you still have that Corvette if I see him around? But now that I have these glasses on my head, it says Bill Smith over the top of his head, and I can say, hey, Bill, haven't seen you in forever. How are you doing?
Yep. It's the Jim Solanowski. Back in the day, I have anomia. I do not remember people's names. I just don't.
CRS.
I struggle. I've struggled with that all my life.
Which everybody does.
It's
because you're a friendly guy.
But I can't. I remember faces. I know what they mean to me. I know where I know them from. I just can't. Names slide out of my head. It's called anomia, and it's an actual disease.
Sure.
And I have it. And Jim Solanowski and I used to walk around campus together, and he would say, oh, here comes such and so.
Uh-huh.
Here comes so and so. He was my Apple glasses.
Yes, right. Your Cyrano. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. and so I could say, hey, Mary, hey, Tom, hey, Fred, you know.
Yes.
And I look like a good guy.
Right.
So thank you, Jim.
And you were so thankful.
If you're listening, thank you. I love that about you.
You didn't realize how much you needed that until...
until I had him.
Until he was there, and then he was gone. So,
that's
yeah.
right.
Oh, I suffer from the same thing. My late wife, what she would do to save my bacon... is, you know, I go, well, I can't remember the name. She'd go up to the person and say, hi, I'm Lori. I understand you know Dave. And they'd introduce themselves. Uh-huh. And then I'd know because they'd say, oh, I'm so-and-so.
Oh, you had a wingman.
Yes. She was always good at covering my butt on that.
And I feel bad about it. I love people. I just cannot remember names.
No, that is the...
And it's not personal.
It's not personal.
No, they say most average folks... cannot remember three quarters of the names when you first meet them.
Right? Probably not. Yeah. No, I'm...
When you're first meeting, especially at a party.
Oh, yeah.
You will not remember over half, three right. quarters of the names.
And I've tried all the mnemonics, right?
Sure.
Repeat their name.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dennis. Oh, hi, Dennis. How are you?
Yes.
Nice
right.
to meet you, Dennis. Glad to see you, Dennis. Talk to you later, Dennis.
Right. And then forget their name.
And it's gone.
Yep, same here. No.
It's out. It's lost. All right, we ought to go to the phones. Poor James has been holding on forever. James, assuming that's your name, welcome. What's up?
Yes, fascinating conversation on the killer app. Love what you guys are talking about.
Thank you.
Quick question. I use Google Chrome, and you can let me know if something's changed or if I've goofed up here. In the address bar on top, for example, I'll type in bicycles, and I then hit images, and it used to fill up the whole page with pictures. Now it's just got a little strip running across the top. What is that?
That's the new change that Google has made.
It's not you, it's them.
It's them, and what they've done is they've created a whole new... it's all AI based now.
Uh-huh.
And so what's important to them is the AI thing, and it's all borrowed and you use that. So they're de-emphasizing other stuff, to make it better for them to do that. And it's a pain in the neck. And I absolutely get that. You should be able, it depends on the thing. You should be able to click the images button across the top and then see all the images. But it's not as, that's interesting. It's not the way it used to be.
It's terrible. I hate it. I hit the images, but it's like you say, it's just straight across horizontally.
Yeah, it depends. Sometimes you'll get real images. Like, for example, I had WinGet in my browser and I hit images. And the first line is all images of WinGet in a terminal,
mm-hmm.
And then on the second line, it's all Jennifer WinGet, whoever she is.
Okay.
But there's her picture.
So I can't change it back where the whole page is filled with pictures, like of bicycles, for example.
Right. No, you should be able to scroll down and see more pictures, but
I can't.
Yeah, you. If I hit images, I can now see images of bicycles, but you're right. The first row is just, it's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if that was a new setting I can go to get it back the old way.
No, I wish it were. They don't give you that option at this point.
Ooh. Okay, thank you, Nick and Dave.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep.
And Dennis.
Well, yeah.
And Dennis. I think...
sorry, you couldn't remember my name.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. I just don't do names. But that's the thing I've always wanted Google. That's what I originally wanted Google Glass for.
That's going to be a killer app.
It didn't do facial recognition at the time.
Right.
But the Vision Pro thing is more like the Oculus.
Yes.
Right? So it's not really that. You can't walk around not seeing anything all day.
Right, right. No, there's... I think they're going to have an AR component. And again, I haven't seen the video and I need to watch it. It's on my to-do list. But I'm hoping that at some point when we get, and it may be a version 3, version 4 thing, that we end up with either something I can clip to my existing glasses and maybe with some type of coating on one side or both sides that it will put up.
A heads-up display?
I don't
contextual
even mind
if, information that would be helpful.
Right. And I don't even mind if I then have to have an earpiece. Well, I can't because I have hearing aids. But,
sure. They can talk to your hearing aids. Maybe a little Bluetooth.
That's right.
Bluetooth.
And then I can, it can say...
This man is Dave Smith. You met him in 1979.
Right.
He has 3 kids and his wife's name is June.
Right. And out there, all that information is out there somewhere.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
This information brought to you by Google.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. You got to get the advertising.
That's the killer app there. When they can say this information brought to you by.
Right.
That's the thing that's going to sell it right there. There's a whole set of things we haven't thought of yet. But you can't think of them until the hardware is available. And that's what we're talking about. Apple has put out some new hardware, has upgraded some old hardware, and now new capabilities are in reach. And over the next couple of years, we'll see those new capabilities come to the fore.
Yeah. I predict as boomers continue to increase in age that we will see more things related to medical care. We'll see more things related to here are the trends in the things we've been studying with all of the data we've been collecting from anonymized from all of these different people. Maybe you should start walking on Tuesday afternoons. Here's a route you could take.
Yep.
And it's 1 mile long. We notice you've been eating more raisins lately. And in general, we think you should try having more asparagus instead.
Dennis, we know you're a cyclist.
Yes, yes.
And we also know you like kites.
Sure.
We see that you have never biked through this park.
Yes.
On a Tuesday afternoon when everybody's out flying kites.
When the kite club gets together.
When the kite club gets together.
You might
maybe
enjoy
you should
this.
Try that.
Yes. Right.
Well, and that's a tiny little thing that improves your quality of life.
Yes.
How is that bad?
Or you're a cyclist and this particular road has had more crashes.
Don't go there.
Recently, maybe try an alternate route. Or this route has more hills and you don't need to do hill work. You need to do long, steady distance on this flatter road that's much longer with fewer people nearby.
Yep.
There's a million different suggestions it could make based on, heck, if you're going to collect all this data, put it towards something that I can use, not something that the evil overlords can use, right?
Exactly.
Give me something out of it.
Exactly. All right. Well, that music tells us that we are done for another week. These 2 hours have flown by. And that's, of course, thanks to Dave Enright. Thanks to Dennis Worcester, who, again, comes in and does yeoman service whenever Steve is not available. I'm Nick Francesco. But what really made this hour fly was all of you. So thank you for your calls. Thank you for listening. We're very, very humbled that you people continue to tune in every week. Get a life, for heaven's sake. Make something of yourself. However, for those of you who don't, we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be solely member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.